This is the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today is the founder and president of Ag Resource, Dan Bossi. Dan Bossi set to join us in just a moment. First off, let's talk about guaranteed quantity and accumulation levels. What are they? Jared Morgan with StoneX says,
when determining whether this is a feature a farmer wants to utilize or not, they really need to look at those accumulation levels and the trade-off that they're giving for that guarantee that they are going to price a known amount of bushels. It's also probably worth looking at the knockout level. If that knockout level is at a price that the producer could live with, knowing that they need to reevaluate their strategy when they get knocked out, then maybe it's worth assuming that risk that the knockout may occur and we'll have to reevaluate our strategy when, if and when that happens.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're with Dan Bossi, Ag Resource. Okay, Dan, speaking at the ADM Investor Services meeting here in Nashville, good opportunity. Why come visit with the attendees here at a conference like this? What's in that for you?
Well, I've done this for about two decades now, and ADM is one of my bigger clients, so it's always good to do that. But more importantly, I believe that the brokers that are here or people in agriculture need to understand the landscape of agriculture, and I need to kind of turn them into ambassadors in terms of, you know, what are we going to do for the farmer? What should the farmer be thinking about? And in this case, you know, my mind really goes back to thinking about the back end of the futures markets and prices above break even and how farmers need to sell and defend to manage their risk and stay in business. Agriculture is a cyclical business, and there's times of highs and lows. We're just in one of those lows, and so for the next year or two, we need to keep farmers in business for the better times that are likely ahead from policy changes down the road.
You know what? You already answered the question. I was going to say, what is the real goal here? What is the job of these brokers? And you said,
no, it really is. And it's that ambassadorship. I want them to think about, you know, the average price of corn for a U.S. farmers were out $4.65 a bushel, $10.70 on soybeans, something around $5.60 on wheat. When markets get above that in the back end, we need to be selling something. And then we step into a growing season where there could be a drought or something. Let's defend that with a call. But I, again, my big message after being in this business for 45 years is preserving the family farm and making sure that they're around for the next good time. They will come. It's just going to be a few years down the road.
You know, usually when you hit a home run, you celebrate it. Growers have hit a home run on the yields and growing a great crop, whether we're talking corn or beans. But the problem is we're not celebrating. And why are we not celebrating that? And at the end of the day, who's going to buy?
Yeah, so the farmer has been blessed with record yields this year, both on corn and soybeans, and good yields on wheat, particularly spring wheat. So it is, you know, again, that's what farmers do. The farmers work hard every year to get these big yields. That's their job. Where the celebration stops and the party gets to be rather gloomy and the cocktails get tipped over is when we look at the market and they say, okay, I got an extra 6 or 10 bushels of corn, maybe 2 to 4 bushels of beans. But boy, the market's so cheap that those extra bushels aren't improving my life. In life or the net farm income, and that's when it gets a little dire. So, again, every farmer's role should be to produce as much crop as he can because it produces revenue. But we got to think about marketing. We did a study once in which, you know, when you have farm revenue, net farm revenue, 69% of it's determined by his market decisions. And so that's why I want farmers to think about farming for big yields, but also farming for what the market offers.
You suggested that, you know, maybe we need to find a way to pull some acres out of production. We did that years ago with CRP and good, bad, we did it. How do we move forward though? Because if we pull acres out, don't we just encourage production in South America?
Well, you're right, Tony. I mean, back in the 80s when the CRP program was established in 1986, set aside 40 million acres, we look back at ag history, we are always setting aside acreage to manage supply. the problems with supply going forward or policy going forward from this government is that if we set aside acres in the United States, we just help a Russian, a Brazilian, an Argentinian, Ukrainian farmer. And so our share of the market globally goes down and we lose customer business. So setting aside or having a supply management is just not a good ag policy for the United States. And so to your point, we have about 23 million acres in the CRP program. We could expand it a little more. Maybe we do, as rates have been relatively high, but it's not the kind of program that's going to get us to where we can see bullish markets as it has in recent decades. Accordingly, because of our market share, has now dropped globally to about 17%.
Dan Bossie, Ag Resource, here at the ADM Investor Services meeting. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're with Dan Bossie. 30 years ago, we saw a bump up in prices coming along with ethanol. And the big question, is this the new normal? Well, things have changed since then. What do you see with renewable fuels moving forward?
You know, I struggle with this administration. They are very supportive of the farmer, and I give the Trump administration an A plus for that. However, and when it comes to biofuels, there's a lot of struggles here. We just see them moving into Venezuela, and we're now moving Venezuelan oil into the United States. You know, are biofuels part of the homegrown energy solution, or are we part of the big green lie? And this administration needs to weigh in on that. I do expect we'll see an expanded RVO going forward, but will we get E15? That's something that could add 2.6 billion bushels of corn demand probably in 3 to 4 years. Those are the kind of policy decisions that we need to make. But in doing so, it's that dance between big oil and agriculture that has to happen, and both have to be agreeable to the party that could follow.
So if we do go with that E15, it's mandated, comes through Congress, and it's not an administrative move from this point forward. Do we have the capacity, or do we need to add?
We need to add. You know, ethanol industry has been adding about 1% capacity for the last 10 years. If we were to look at running higher capacity rates, maybe moving up to like 94, 95% in ethanol, we could add 400 to 500 million bushels of corn for the next couple of years. But when you think about E15, we need the message to build new plants. We need new investment, billions, to get there. And so that's something that only comes from policy. A big ethanol producer like ADM is not expanding ethanol production today. But we did see last week POET, another large ethanol producer, indicate that they were taking in retrofitting an Indiana plant. That's helpful. But I need policy to come along here and the administration to say, hey, we are now moving to mandated E15. Not voluntary. It has to be mandated, as you said.
Do we create some problems along the way if we do that with ethanol? Will we have the demand for distillers' grains? I mean, we've seen some of the issue on the bean side with the mill.
Well, you know, and that's a good question, because protein-wise, whether it's be soy meal or distillers grains, we got too much of all of that. So we're going to have to find additional outlets within the livestock industry, domestically or global industry, in terms of lower prices. This will hurt margins. But ultimately, I need more protein around the world, whether it be chicken, pork, or beef. And so my hope is that the feathered friends, poultry in particular, global flocks increase to help feed an ever hungrier world that needs more protein.
So we really haven't talked much about China at all, but China is in every conversation whenever we talk ag. Is that still a growing market, or has it hit maturity yet?
You know, we think China's mature. As you think about their soybean demand going forward, it's probably going to be between 95 and 110 million metric tons. This year, we think USDA is too high and will come down. China's satiated with soybeans right now, and their livestock herds are declining. Their hog herd is coming down. I think we need to think about China no longer as that growth engine that it has been since 2001 when they entered the WTO. We now need to think about others, India, Africa, Southeast Asia, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Thailand. China's no longer a growth market, and American farmers need to get beyond China. But in the world soybean market, China still imports roughly two-thirds of all soybeans.
You mentioned India in there. What will it take for India to be that great trade partner that we need? We obviously have some issues in ag. How do we get there?
It's going to be tough. The Indians are going to be very protective of their farmer, and they've been showing that in trade negotiations. I think India is 10 or 15 years away from being a big importer of size and substance relative to the population and GDP rates. So that protecting of farm income to get elected in Indian elections is key. But as I think longer term, I do think there's going to be India coming to the world market. But as I said, we're probably not looking till 2035 or 2040 before the next opportunity would be there.
Okay, so the market knows. You ended your presentation with that. What's that mean?
Well, as we look out in the next 3 years for corn and soybean and wheat producers, the markets are all at the same price in D's corn for 27, 28, 29, soybeans 27, 28, and 29, same on wheat. So the market's at break even for the American farmer, not at a premium that's buying more acreage. So normally these kind of relationships are not what we see in deferred futures. So when I say the market knows that we are not trying to buy more supply. It's looking at Washington to maybe do something in policy to get us in a different spot in demand that will help out the American farmer.
Okay, I started with the analogy of hitting a home run. Are we at a place right now in American ag where we just need to get on base, whether it's a base hit, it's a walk, get hit by a pitch, somehow get on base?
Yeah, no, American farmers need to think about selling crop. If you're making 5 or 10% on a deferred futures relative to selling your crop, you need to do some of that. You know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, I don't care what it is, but sell and defend so that, you know, if you add together PLC payments, government ad hoc payments like the bridge loan that is now going out, you put them all together and you're going to be saying, well, that wasn't a bad year and I'm there to take the neighbor's land who's not doing that. So that's the message I want to leave with these brokers and of course, the listeners going forward.
Okay, Dan, if we want to keep up with Ag Resource, are you online?
Yeah, we're always online at agresource.com and happy to help any way we can with the American farmer, any of your needs in agriculture.
Dan Bossy, Ag Resource here at the ADM Investor Services meeting in Nashville. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Recent White House event, signing of the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act, Dr. Ben Carson.
Whole milk is a wonderful beverage. Good protein, we talk about real food. It is real food. Healthy fats, important nutrients. You look at vitamin D, look at calcium, phosphorus, the things that are absolutely essential for bone development and for teeth. But as a neurosurgeon, the thing I really like is the brain, what it does for the brain. You know, the brain starts to develop right after conception. and adds millions of neurons every single day. Continues to do that right up until the mid to late 20s. Now, it's important what that brain is getting during the development. Is it getting soda? Mm-hmm. Or is it getting milk?
So milk would help your cognitive ability.
Absolutely. You can tell who's been
taking cognitive tests. I've taken a lot of them. I've aced every one of them because I drink milk.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
For the most part, increased production and price forecasts from the prior month are noted in USDA's January Meat Outlook. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankowski says some exceptions include
tight supplies that are kind of dominating the market for cattle and beef. So year over year, beef production expected to be down 260 million pounds.
Despite month-over-month production increases forecasted for beef in 2025 and 2026. Meanwhile, broiler production projections for last year were slightly lowered from the previous month, while broiler production for 2026 note month-over-month and year-over-year increases.
In terms of global meat trade, most of the changes this month were relatively minor. Pork exports for 2026, we raised 65 million pounds this month. Year-over-year, they would be up about 123 million pounds.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.